listening to TBR Radio, brought to you by the Barnes Review. Now, the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with your host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody. As you know, the greatest thing about doing the job that I do is making new friends. And a lot of the guests I've had on have become friends. And one of them, who's back today, a regular guest, did a fantastic show recently on 9/11. And he wants to explore that subject further in relation to gang stalking, which is another subject that he's an expert on. So I'm pleased to welcome back to the show Dr. Eric Karlstrom. Eric, are you with me?
I'm with you, Andy, and looking forward to joining you again here.
Absolutely. Well, we've had a good chat before the show, as we always do, and getting an idea of different things to discuss. And I think it's best if I just hand over to you to take it away with where you want to go with 9/11, to add any information that you felt we didn't have time for during the last show, which was a special on, went out on 9/11. And so just take it away, and I'll make any notes for any questions, and I'll jump in with them. So over to you, Eric.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Andy. You know, I think we really covered some very, very important ground on our last interview on September 11th. I haven't heard anybody else discuss the things that we discussed and connect the dots that we connected last time. Let me just say, you know, for the benefit of listeners who might be new, you know, I'm a retired geography professor, spent 30 years in the university system in America teaching. And then on my retirement, I really kind of doubled down and got to work on researching issues that I thought were really critical to our society and even our species. And basically just kept researching. And so I have 5 websites that I have maintained and I'm still maintaining. Let me just rattle those off. 911nwo.com, something that I got going on really quite quickly after 9/11. I wrote a paper in 2002 called Reflections on the Origins of 9/11, 3 Scenarios, in which I pretty much proved that it was an inside job. Of course, that got me on people's radar, that power structure, I'm sure, because that went around the internet, and I put my name on it. And at the time, there was a lot of fear, and most people didn't put their name on things like that. I also have a website, naturalclimatechange.org, which disproves the global warming fraud myth, which, of course, is central to the whole Agenda 21 of the United Nations, prototypical world government, etc., bogus science, fraudulent science. And it happens to be my field, so I especially these are huge websites. These are basically digital libraries of information that I have maintained as really a public service. I don't charge. And then I have another one on the water issues in my San Luis Valley, Southern Colorado, called San Luis Valley Waterwatch.com, one of the largest freshwater aquifers here in the world. Remember, I was a geography professor, so these are the kinds of things that I would have taught and been interested in. I've always been a musician, so the only thing I charge for is some of my CDs. I have a website, erickarlstrom.com, and still cranking out CDs. I'll be doing a banjo CDs this fall, and maybe a gospel CD as well. And then the most recent site is about a year old. It's come out of my research on 9/11. It's called gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com. About 2013, I realized that something was going on very strange in my life and started to put the pieces together and realized that I was a targeted individual. So anyway, when you are a targeted individual by this very, very odious and global system, you know, knowledge is really your best defense. So to help myself survive and as well as others, I have been very, very busy during the last year putting up this gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com website. So what I really wanted to do this time is hopefully kind of pick up where we left off last time, which was to compare Operation 9/11, which certainly is an intelligence operation that, you know, and the gang stalking operation, sometimes called organized stalking, electronic harassment. These are multi-trillion dollar operations. They're also covert operations. They're black operations, and they are crimes, and they are unsolved crimes. And of course, they remain unsolved because we have media complicity, and you certainly know why, because the media is owned by the power structure. And, of course, government is complicit. And what I think we really, you know, let me just underscore the really, what I think is breaking new ground here from last show. I showed that, okay, Christopher Bolin's book, Solving 9/11, pins it on the Mossad and the Jews. Well, he's right. we talked about that, you know. And, of course, looking at Michael Chertoff, who was the associate or assistant attorney general during 9/11 and let the 200 or so Israeli spies and operatives go without questioning, including the five dancing Israelis at the 9/11 scene who said they were there just to document the event. He let them go without questioning. Of course, he himself is a dual Israeli-American citizen, grandfather of a rabbi or grandson of a rabbi. And well, then he goes on, and he was the guy who should have prosecuted this as a crime. That, there was never a trial that would have allowed examination of evidence. In fact, he allowed the destruction of the evidence at the site, like such the steel, etc. He went on then to become the first chief of Homeland Security, Department of Homeland Security, a year later, which of course set up this colossal new bureaucracy, which in which all of the anti-terrorism elements of the government were subsumed under one umbrella, you know, with a $40 billion a year budget and now a 250,000 people working for it. And of course, the Department of Homeland Security is, you know, really got all these fusion centers now, 78 of them. They identify individuals to be put on the terrorist watch list, blah, blah, blah. And then once you're on the watch list, there's at least 2 million in America, then they can do all these experiments on you. In other words, now you can be gang stalked more or less legally by the society as a whole. And the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, said in 2003 they want to enlist 100 million Americans as citizen spies, which would be almost one out of three Americans. If you can imagine what a country is like with one out of three being a spy, spying on your neighbor. I mean, these are all ratfink, cockroach, you know, scumbags, ratting on their neighbor, you know, oh, he pooped him, dog pooped on my lawn, blah, 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 put him on the list, you know. And so now we have this you know, the guns and the eyes are turned inward against, you know, citizens, targeting citizens, innocent citizens. And this now is global. So, again, this now then after that he does his stint at Homeland Security. Then he goes off and he's the head of the Chertoff Group, which is making a fortune doing the actual spying and terrorizing and whatnot against American citizens. So you know, this is just one of many examples. Then you got Larry Silverstein, you know, the guy who owned the who bought the World Trade Center Twin Towers, you know, 3 months before the attacks, insured it for billions of dollars, spent $14 million of his own money, and reaped $4.7 billion in insurance claims, and is trying to get another $3 billion. And he's the guy who talked to Netanyahu every week on the phone, you know. So we have this, and then there's Alvin K. Hellerstein, as I said last time, the judge who bought off with about $1 million each all of the 3,000 or so victims, families of the victims who were killed on 9/11, so that there would never be a trial, which would allow, you know, subpoenaing witnesses and calling for evidence, et cetera. So there's never been a criminal trial of 9/11, and yet we're told that this is an act of war. Now we have to prosecute all these wars in the Middle East that benefit Israel, you know, according to the Yodid Yinan plan of 1982. The Israeli journalist says we want to Balkanize on all our neighbors. Well, okay, so it's a rock solid slam dunk shut case of the United States doing the will, the foreign policy of Israel and the Jewish Sionim in America, who are the secret agents for Israel that work with the Israeli Mossad, helping to carry this off at every single level of the operation. But then also I showed, based on the work of Webster Tarpley, the economic historian who wrote the book 9/11, Synthetic Terrorism Made in the USA, Tarpley makes the case, okay, this is another false flag, synthetic state-sponsored terror event. Tarpley shows that 46 drills were going on the day of 9/11 by the military and many, many other interagency agencies like, you know, UN, NATO, and NASA, and all these. Air Force was very involved. All of these drills then mimicked every aspect of the actual operation, and at the last minute, of course, it flipped live. And this is how they do these state-sponsored synthetic false flag terror events. So obviously the American government is deeply complicit, and the most amazing of all of these drills, as it turns out to me, that Webster Tarpley exposed from newspaper articles, was that the continuity of government for the first time kicked into action on that day. It wasn't Cheney in the basement of the White House, as we were led to believe. Actually, the actual governance of the United States went into Cheyenne Mountain, this underground bunker in Colorado, about 90 miles from where I live, near Colorado Springs. And so it was a drill for continuity of government, COG, which would kick in the event that the country goes into martial law, and then they have a, stay in your house or you're arrested kind of thing, or putting people in FEMA camps or whatever. So Tarpley's fifth edition of his book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Made in the USA, brings this out, these connections out. And it shows that the United States completely complicit, the Office of the President, Vice President, completely complicit to the Air Force, the military, the intelligence services, all on board. Okay, so we've got this strange dynamic. Was it Israel? Is it American Jewry? Is it the United States government? It's certainly not Osama bin Laden, who was a CIA asset back in the 80s and, was dying of kidney failure at the time. That was all a big cover story. So what's the deal here, Andy? Does Israel own the United States? Well, that's exactly what Ariel Sharon, the Prime Minister of Israel, said October 2001. He said, don't worry about what the Americans think. We, the Jews, control America, and the Americans know it. That's what he said.
Yeah.
This is the Prime Minister of Israel saying, we control America and the Americans know it. Don't worry about what the Americans think. Well, this is proof, isn't it, that Israel and the Jews, both in Israel and in the United States, control the United States. I mean, we are an occupied nation, are we not?
Well, I absolutely agree. It's amazing what we've been subjected to. I mean, it seems all the nations around the world are. And what I try and drag people back to is any government that basically allows a monetary system in which a few families, notably Jewish families, can print money out of nothing and then lend it to you at interest. And if you can't pay it back, they can take your property. That's a tyranny. That's not a government. And that's the way the banking system works. I had a guy from who was on the board of directors of South Africa Reserve Bank on my show, Stephen Mitford Goodson. And he said, if you go, and I'm not going off topic, I'm just giving you the example the way I see it. If you go and get a $500,000 mortgage, then all the bank does is they write a credit of $500,000 in their accounts. And that's the credit because that's the money that they're going to get from you over time. So they give it, they award it to themselves straight away because they're going to get it from you. So they just create it out of nothing. And this is the real thing that we need to point out to people because they wouldn't have got their power if they didn't have this ability to, create alchemy, just create money out of nothing. What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. If we could repeal the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, which gave the control of the U.S. economy to this consortium of private bankers in Europe, mostly Jewish, as you say, then, and have the country, the nation, print its own money, as indeed the Constitution stipulates. And if we could cut Israel off from all the aid we've given it, the trillions of dollars, and as well as military aid, et cetera, then we go a long way to fixing the problem. But yeah, you're right. They create money out of nothing, and then they lend it to you, and you pay them interest on it. So they're just sitting in the back, with their big fancy buildings and collecting all this money out of nothing because they have this structure. As you say, it's a Babylonian banking structure, fractional reserve lending. Yeah, that is the core. And it is alchemy. Really, it's magic. It's a trick. And And yeah, the money rules. And it says so in the protocols, you know, that you know, by money, we'll control everything. So they have done that. And America, meanwhile, of course, is the beast that is prosecuting all these wars, you know, five or six in the Middle East, that basically does Israel's bidding of creating a greater Israel, which, you know, their flag with the blue bars, you know, is sent with the, you know, the hexagram in the middle, which is a extremely occult symbol. It basically says, okay, we want all the land between the Tigris, Euphrates on the one side and the Nile on the other side, and that's going to be greater Israel. Well, but that's not enough. From there, they're going to take over the whole world because that's their, you know, 3,000-5,000-year ambition for establishing a Jewish utopia, a Jewish universal empire. So that's what this is all about. And we need to be very, very clear about that. People need to know that there is this long-term plan that actually Judaism is based upon hatred of all other quote-unquote races. And this point is brought out very well in a book by Michael Hoffman, Judaism Discovered. You know, it's in fact, it's the worship of Satan. And
that's
and
a
hatred.
Book about 12.
So these.
Sorry, yeah. I was just going to say that's a hell of a book. It's about 1,200 pages, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's large format, so it's about the size of two phone books.
Yeah, and he goes through the Talmud, you know, which is their sacred scripture, which is basically the teachings of the rabbis, the teachings of the elders, you know, that say it's okay to rob, lie, cheat, steal, kill goyim, which is humans that are not Jews. We're cattle, beasts to them. So you know, you get into this incredible racial superiority thing that the Jews have. So that's what's underpinning this. So wherever they go, as you point out in your book, Synagogue of Satan, and this is the Synagogue of Satan, wherever they go, they form a nation within a nation, trying to, you know, bring down that nation stealthily through their connections, through their control of finance, et cetera, to destroy it. Well, okay, so all of that, I think we can kind of, you know, we can agree. I mean, this is what's happening. But now let's add this other thing, which, okay, so 9/11 then becomes the linchpin, the trigger event, which is going to change the world as we know it, as they say. And now this launches this global war on terrorism forever, because the terrorists are everywhere and nowhere, and we got to keep fighting them. Well, terrorism is, in fact, a form of warfare. It's low-intensity conflict. It's the use of violence to intimidate and coerce civilian populations. And terrorism, in fact, is what the Israeli and British and American governments have been doing intentionally for many, many, many decades. And always, of course, calling it counterterrorism. We have to go get those terrorists, so we'll do terrorism against them. But in fact, they're usually funding, like the CIA and Mossad will fund ISIS and the Mujahideen and Al-Qaeda, create these as the enemy. And now you have a reason to go in and have a war in the country. And you fund these secret armies. And if you start to look at the history of the CIA's funding of secret armies, they've been doing it all over the world since World War II. And this, of course, destabilizes the regions. And so the CIA has picked up the ball and is working, you know, 1,000, 10,000% really for this elite Jewish power structure to bring in their one world government. There can be no doubt about that. I've proven this on my websites over and over again, and I continue to prove it as I dig up these illegal operations like Operation Gladio in Italy, you know, which killed Aldo Moro, the prime minister of Italy. This was basically gang stalking. All over Europe after World War II, they're doing gang stalking to terrorize the civilian population. Arabs were not involved. This was secret armies, stay-behind armies, that the CIA and NATO and MI6 funded and organized with the local intelligence services and private groups like the Masons, the P2 Lodge in Italy. These were terrorizing the civilian population, making sure that there would be no kind of leftward drift towards communism in the political realm by killing off the people who were leftists. So this is what you call kind of social engineering, management perception, cultural engineering, political warfare, psychological warfare. And the CIA has been doing it since World War II, just about. From the 50s to the 90s, Gladio went on secretly. Nobody knew about it, but all these guys are dying. in terrorizing situations. Well, in 1990, Prime Minister Andreotti admitted it. 40 years of secret armies killing people in terrorism. Okay, Arabs not involved. This is the CIA, NATO, and local groups forming secret armies to terrorize the civilian population. Well, this is now what's going on all over the world with this gang stalking, organized stalking, electronic harassment. But now we've added the component of this of Tesla technology, these invisible electronic weapons, psychotronic weapons, directed energy weapons, microwave, millimeter wave, acoustic weapons, lasers, all these things we can't see that the government has been experimenting on hugely since World War II and have now created what they called in the 80s a revolution in military affairs. So now we have this whole new bag of tricks that's going to change the way warfare is done forever. And, you know, a lot of these are space-based weapons. A lot of, and these weapons can be used from, you know, land-based or sea-based or whatever. Different wavelengths of electromagnetic radiation. The electromagnetic spectrum has been weaponized. And neuroscience, that is to say brain science, has been weaponized to create, put these two together. Now you have neuro-warfare. So the warfare of the present time is not nuclear. It's something more powerful and more scary because neuro-warfare has the potential to create zombies who are mind-controlled, who will do the bidding of the intelligence services or whoever's in power. And this is what the CIA has always wanted to do. Ever since their MKUltra experiment starting back in 1953, actually go back a couple years to Bluebird and Artichoke, all these secret operations, all this is to get other people to do your bidding against their self-interest and against even their self-preservation. It says that in the original documents. Well, now they can do this with these, say, secret silent weapons. So my sense now is that we have a silent holocaust occurring right now around the world. It's global, and it's occurring with these directed energy weapons. Okay, here's the tie-in to 911. I think Judy Wood has shown that directed energy weapons, this gigantic new type of weaponry potentially more damaging than nuclear weapons, was used to bring the Twin Towers down. And she's got the credentials to make this kind of assertion, has done the research, written a book, Where Did the Towers Go?, showing that the steel and the concrete and the glass and everything were basically, you know, dematerialized in front of our eyes, and the buildings came down along a wavefront at the speed of gravity almost, defying all the laws of normal physics. So we're into a new physics here.
Yeah, was, sorry to jump in quickly, Eric. I'm very pleased you raised that point because it was literally just all ground into dust. You know, you'd think that when you saw the wreckage, you might have bits of computers sticking up and something, but it was all this same dust. I mean, I assume that it was the weapon that they used, whether it was a if that was something nuclear weapons could do, if that was used or what have you, but certainly something was used that seemed to just turn it all into a powder.
Absolutely, yeah, and not only that, but she looked at 10,000 plus high quality photos, you know, including space photos, and she saw this kind of gray plume. It's not really dust. It's kind of like a plasma film or something, drift upwards. In other words, it's not going down. You know, dust will go down. Sand, silt, and clay-sized particles will eventually fall out. Clay will stay in the atmosphere for a while, you know. But this stuff was rising, and she of course on her photos she saw the same stuff at ground level too. Kind of these, she called them gray fuzzy blobs. She had to develop a new lexicon terminology to describe the phenomena she was looking at because this is new phenomena. So she actually has kind of whimsical terms, you know, like fuzzy blobs and stuff like that. And this is what happened on that day. That new technology, directed energy weapons, was demonstrated to the world. And so she says it's not like a new Pearl Harbor, really. It's like more like a new Hiroshima in the sense that, you know, the nations of the world, the intelligence agencies of the nations of the world would pick up on the fact that this extraordinary new weapon was available. The United States has it, and watch out, because we can do this to anybody, any place, any time, you know, with directed energy weapons. Well, so in other words, this is a black operation. It probably cost trillions of dollars to you know, and it's a 30-plus year operation, according to Senator Bob Kerry. He said that, you know, it's a 30-year plan here, you know. And he was in the military himself in Operation Phoenix in the Vietnam War. So he had some inside information there. So 30-year operation planning in Washington, D.C. for a and by the way, one of the fallout things that happened, there are lots and lots of fallout. We could talk about this for another 5 years, you know, but if, you know, of course, lots of money was transferred on the day of, so that there was insider trading and there, you know, knowledge at the top. There was foreknowledge. The Odigo firm, you know, that had Jews working for them, Israeli firm working in the buildings, you know, 2 hours before the event, they were all told not to go to work that day. So there was obviously foreknowledge.
Just very quickly, the insider trading. It's funny because we never got to the bottom of that. That seemed to be a story that just disappeared, didn't it? Never told us who it was.
Well, you know, guys like Christopher Berlin, you know, they pick up on this, you know, in their books, you know. So I've probably got 30 books on 9/11, you know, and then my website is huge. So, you know, I've also got lots and lots of articles. And of course, you know, as a caveat, I have to say there's, you know, a lot of disinformation out there you have to sift through. But, you know, now that we're, you know, 16 years later, you know, the picture does become more clear. Well, what happened when those Twin Towers fell? It was very symbolic. Of course, it was attacking the financial institutions of the United States, the power center of the United States, as well as the Pentagon, which is the other power center. And from what I understand, the World Financial Center has moved to Tel Aviv now, you know, from New York City. Well, of course, all this is, you know, right along because scripted, because they eventually want to rule the world from Jerusalem. I mean, that's the goal. They're going to have their one world government with Jerusalem as the capital. And then we're all going to be in the Noahide laws, which means the Jewish laws for Gentiles, which means if you worship Christ, you're an idolater and off with your head. That's what it means.
Yeah.
Noahide laws seem very warm and fuzzy at first, but then, you know, it seems pretty innocuous. But Noahide laws were actually passed on the benefit of Rabbi Schneerson in, you know, on these Lubavitchers in New York City back in the late 80s as an honor to him. We're under Noahide laws in the United States.
Yeah, so Education
another
Day.
Another example of Jewish control.
Sorry about that. Education Day USA. George Bush, Daddy Bush signed it in, didn't he? Part of Education Day USA, something really, really peculiar. But yeah, it's signed in there. Absolutely right.
Yeah. So, you know, again, the United States is an occupied country. We, our institutions do not function for the American citizens. Our protections do not protect the American citizens. We are a shell now. And, of course, with Department of Homeland Security and these fusion centers and the terrorism watch list, the constitutional rights of all the individuals who are targeted, such as myself, are out the window. I mean, they are doing these mental experiments on us. They're trying to kill us with these PSYOP setups. You know, I mean, what you're dealing with, again, the organized stalking is one component. That'll go back to, you know, the FBI's COINTELPRO. They did that in the 50s and 60s and 70s. They used it in Operation Gladio. So, you know, we can trace that thread. And then the killing part, of course, in the Phoenix program in Vietnam, they actually put out, you know, kill lists. CIA would make these counterinsurgency lists and say, okay, go get these civilians. And then the military would go kill them. And this is the Phoenix program with local interrogation centers and national interrogation centers and provincial interrogation system centers, much like our fusion centers here. Well, they killed about 50,000 civilians in Vietnam between about, 1967 and 71 when they shut the program down. But then they kept that template, used it in Central and South America. They became the death squads of Central and South America. They have used it and are using it in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. These are the death squads. So you can look at the modern gang stalking as death squads. It's a secret army comprised of civilians plus military plus mercenaries, etc., mercenary stocking cells. They have access to the highest technology, all these directed energy weapons. They are using these as neuro warfare, experimenting with these as neuro warfare weapons against individuals. So now we have a situation where you know, warfare is not conducted anymore necessarily between nation states. That was third generation warfare. Now we're in fourth generation warfare. Now the entire apparatus of the nation state plus the civilian sector can be targeting individuals, terrorists. You know, of course, terrorists is anybody they want to get rid of. You know, they're the terrorists. You know, always the state is the terrorist. There's a book by Iqbal Ahmed called Confronting Empire. And he said, you know, he identified five kinds of terrorism. He said state-sponsored terrorism is by far the dominant, and the terrorism of small private groups. I mean, the ratio is about at least 1,000 to 1. All the resources are from the state. So terrorism is being conducted by the state against individuals and small groups. And that's the new warfare. That's the revolution and military affairs. That's fourth generation warfare is what they call it. That is military doctrine. So we actually have the U.S. military ganging up with, you know, local police and civic groups like Neighborhood Watch and, you know, Citizens on Patrol if you're in Canada. And they are targeting, terrorizing individual American citizens, Canadian citizens, British citizens, citizens all around the world. That's the new warfare. They take you out one at a time.
I've got a very quick question, Eric. Looking to the future, they seem to like just toying with us and, you know, seeing how they can affect our health and all sorts of other things, as you say. But do you think that there's going to come a point where, you know, overnight there's going to be a mass cull of the people that they regard will never fit, well, the targeted individuals, the people they regard that will never fit in with the New World Order? Or do you think that they're just going to go for a soft kill and try and drive us mad in other ways? What's your thoughts?
Well, good question. Exactly. Both. All of the above. I mean, this gives them the power to do that. Either one. You could use a mass culling of the herd here with this technology, silently, secretly taking out entire populations with these directed energy weapons. And you know, of course, they can also alter moods and with the different frequencies, they can, you know, do heart attacks and strokes and cancer and things like that. And then they can just cull the individual troublemakers, you know, put them in the ground. And so this gives the leaders, the rulers, exceptional power over the species. Now, if you go back to, again, the 1992 Rio Earth Summit, it became policy. This is, of course, the United Nations Rio Earth Summit. The UN took on the, you know, the stance that we have to eliminate 85% of the people of the planet to save the Earth. You know, this is total bullshit. I was a geography professor, and I can tell you this is nonsense. This is Malthusian propaganda. And of course, they've got to make us believe that we're destroying the planet with global warming and all this stuff. They keep trying to do this, but so this is the other, you know, the other tack. Think of pincers. You know, you've got many different ways to take down the society and establish this global government. But to answer, you know, to go back to your question, I think you're absolutely right. See, this gives them the power to make those decisions. Do it all. And so there have been various attempts in the past, you know, the Space Preservation Treaty of Denis Kucinich in 2001, you know, to limit these kinds of exotic weapons, as you call soft kill, silent kill, slow kill, no touch torture. Non-lethal weapons is kind of the umbrella term, but they can be tuned up easily to become lethal. There have been attempts to regulate these. Apparently Russia has now outlawed them. But, you know, go back to the 70s, there was absolute warfare between the United States and Russia in terms of these directed energy weapons. So there's a long history of this that people are not aware of. That's why I think it's so important. Let me just read this out of the front introduction page to my gang stalking mind control cults.com. I just kind of polished this last night. Gang stalking is a rather misleading term. Indeed, a more accurate terminology would incorporate the concepts of secret military subjugation of civilian populations through the covert deployment of military psyops, low-intensity conflict methodologies, and electronic directed energy weapons, torture directed against designated enemies within those populations. In these programs, TIs are systematically selected, profiled, surveilled, harassed, and destroyed, neutralized, by military intelligence agencies of the United States government in collusion with private contractors, corporations, religious groups, cults, organized crime, and powerful individuals. These police state programs have their antecedents in protocols and citizen spy networks developed by the Soviet Union's Cheka, the state security organization, which killed, you know, upwards of 1.5 million people through terror and torture, etc. The East German Stasi secret police. Of course, we know communism was brought in by the Jews. The Nazi SS Gestapo and other totalitarian police state systems. In America, many essential elements of these programs were deployed in the FBI's covert COINTELPRO, counterintelligence program, of the 60s and 70s, the CIA, NATO's murder, terrorizing, and sabotage of domestic populations in Europe via secret, quote, stay-behind armies between about 1950 and 1990, called Operation Gladio and related programs, the CIA's top-secret MKUltra mind-control programs and experiments extending from the 40s to the present, the CIA's Vietnam-era murder and terrorizing of the Vietnam civilian population termed Operation Phoenix, and scores of similar covert death squad programs applied to scores of other counterinsurgency list nations, including the United States. We do it to ourselves, in the top secret Operation MH Chaos during the Vietnam War. So this is why I call it, I give other acronyms like GOG's New Gestapo, Global Organized Gang Stalking, Neuro Warfare Groups, Electronic Slavery, Torture, and PSYOP Operations. So I think this is a pretty big deal. I think this is a threat to the future of humanity. Now, if you look at the history of this thing, you know, going back to the end of the World War II era, a Jew by the name of Dr. Norbert Wiener wrote a book called Cybernetics, and he wants to meld mind and machine, man's mind and machines, computers and humans all kind of melded together to achieve some kind of immortal cyborg state. Well, what this is doing by, you know, these programs map the mind, and the idea is to digitally reproduce the mind so that they can download the human soul, which they define as the will, intellect, and emotions of an individual, onto a conscious supercomputer, which could then be put on a chip and put in somebody else, and then they could live forever. So we're dealing kind of with the Jewish goal of having immortality and living as God, just like the snake in the garden tempted Adam and Eve, you know, surely you shall not die, surely you shall live as gods, you know. Well, they took the deal. Jesus said, no way, I'm not going to bow down and worship you. Well, the Jews as a race did take the deal. They want earth, they want the material benefits of earth, and they want to live forever as gods, and this is their ticket, you see.
Their Talmud says. I mean, their Talmud essentially indicates that people are looking for one Antichrist, 666. But, you know, the hexagram on the Israeli flag, Eric, that resembles 666. You know, six lines, 6 points, six triangles. And they say that they're going to collectively be their own messiah. So they are collectively the Antichrist, in my opinion.
There's no question about it, in my opinion either. I've done enough reading on this. You know, your book was one of the books that turned me into this, you know, kind of direction. And of course, the many, many, many excellent talks and books by Tex Mars also. And then I started reading other books like Hugh Aiken's Synagogue Rising and Dr. E. Michael Jones' The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact Upon History. And then you get into the Michael Hoffman's huge tome, Judaism Discovered. And you know, again, Tex Mars and his, you know, the Holy Serpent of the Jews.
Yeah,
I mean,
that was,
you know,
the one he had
right
banned.
Yeah,
he had
the
that
rabbis,
one
you know.
Yeah, he had that one banned by Amazon as well. That was when Amazon took mine down. That's the only one of his books they took down, I think.
Yeah, and it's got a couple more coming out now. You know, the Feast of the Beast, which is what they're looking forward to, is they're all going to eat the serpent or whatever, you know. I mean, they have this really bizarre pagan religion, which you know, the Old Testament is kind of a cover story for them, you know. But you know, Douglas Reed, in his great book, The Controversy of Zion, said Judaism is a political program disguised as religion. Ultimately, it's all about conquering the world, but it does have this pagan worship of Satan as the linchpin that kind of motivates them and gives them the permission to go ahead and, you know, rob, steal, cheat, lie, kill everybody else, because nobody else is human. Only they are, you know, worthy of, you know, they're the chosenites in their minds, you know. So yeah, this is all to me very much gelling. I see this all coming together. My research has been, you know, over many years. It takes a lot of years to try to, you know, put it all together. But then with the help of books like yours and Texas and Dr. Michael Jones and Hugh Aikens and Michael Hoffman and whatnot, it starts to, oh, this is what's underlying all of this stuff. And of course, all of these hierarchical systems, like, you know, the U.S. military and, you know, the Congress and everything, have been infiltrated and co-opted through money and through now the corporatocracy, et cetera.
You okay, Eric?
Yeah, yeah, I just kind of paused there.
No, I wondered if you're not coming.
I just finished a thought, you know. So
no, that's fine. I mean, I'll give you a break for a second or so. You're giving such interesting information. I'm not really jumping in because it's only worth me jumping in if I've got a question. And you coming out with some wonderful information here, very, very on point. And yeah, it is absolutely true.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I mean, it amazes me how people can't see it. It amazes me how people can't see the level of Jewish control, even if they go to their own companies. I mean, I remember a company that I worked for, and look back on it now, and the amount of Jews that are just in high-level positions, and they come out of nowhere. And suddenly they're running, you know, big departments and things like that. In the finance industry, this was. And this just happens all over the place. And it's like these positions are reserved for them. They're not working their way up or anything like that. It's just all this control they have. They have the high level people. All people want to talk about is the Rothschild family and the Schiffs and the Warburgs and all that lot. But they don't talk about the fact that, you know, it's a cliche, but there's that saying, you don't get a poor Jew. Well, I'm not aware of any Jews that I've known that have really struggled. I remember Michael Collins Piper saying that he knew one who was a janitor and he had several children, and so he wasn't well off. But, you know, the exception proves the rule in my mind. What's your thoughts?
Well, you know, I mean, you're right. I mean, Henry Ford wrote this book, you know, The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem, back in 1920. And it is the world's foremost problem. And of course, now we're a century later. What I've discovered, Andy, and this has been by experience and to some extent by reading, but a lot by experience. You know, you talk about a hive mind. Jews are collectivists. They are Jews first, wherever they live. Their allegiance is to Judaism and their fellow Jews, not to the nation in which they live. In fact, they'll betray the nation in which they live at the drop of a hat. But and they will support each other to, you know, to advancement and get key positions in order to control institutions within those nations. But I think, you know, if you look at the writings of Eustace Mullins, even back, you know, 50 years ago and before, he was saying that Jews had a kind of secret ways to communicate with each other, which I think that, you know, they can identify each other. They can, they have this kind of secret, almost spy network, which goes way, way, way back. So they're natural born spies. They are always working as a team to support each other in their efforts for world conquest. And you know, which is really an exceptionally interesting survival strategy. And Dr. Kevin MacDonald has written three books about this. You know, he's a professor at California State University, where I taught. And he's been on talk shows and stuff. And he's very academic about all this. And one of his books is The Culture of Critique, which is very interesting. He's talking about the Frankfurt School and all of the deconstructionists, you know, Foucault, Derrida, and all these guys deconstructing Yeah, I mean, that's all coming out of Judaism. Always to weaken the dominant culture. And, of course, as your main interest is immigration. That's all meant to weaken the white dominant culture because they regard whites as the most credible threat to their
Eric, just to jump in quickly, just to let listeners know, I had Dr. Kevin MacDonald on my show to discuss the book, The Culture of Critique. So I read the whole book. That was quite a lot to read for a show. You've got it, obviously, Eric. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we did a two-parter on it, so that's in the archive. Sorry, I just wanted to throw that in for people. Go ahead, please, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, it all starts to come together. And I must say, you know, if there's any... I mean, my parents were intellectuals, you know, and I was introduced to many Jews in my life. You know, I think my godparents probably were Jews. And I was certainly not brought up to be prejudiced against any group. I was brought up not to be prejudiced against any group, at least of all the Jews, because I think that, you know, my parents, having gone through, you know, some very top universities, would have, you know, encountered many of these people and befriended them and become kind of in their sway. Obviously, you know, my parents brought me up as the Unitarian, which is really kind of soft Judaism. You know, it's actually soft. It's humanism, basically soft Satanism, actually. And I've drifted back towards Christianity. So anyway, I'm not coming from a place of, you know, being prejudiced. I'm coming from a place of not being prejudiced. But over the years, you know, one sees the control. I see it in my little town of Krestenbach. It's controlled by Jews. I saw it at the university when I taught at Cal State University Stanislaus. My department was controlled by Jews. You know, it's always kind of behind the scenes, under the table. They're making deals before the meeting that you go to. You go to a meeting, and it's, you know, the outcome has already been decided. You know, so it's a charade.
Eric, if you read what amazes me, mainstream media, it says, oh, and the Prime Minister's going to give a speech today in which she's going to tell us. And so they've got the whole speech already. Why? Because they wrote the damn thing. You know, they're reporting on speeches that people are going to make before they've made them. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well, take an example that brings us back to 9/11. There was Barak Ehud, the former prime minister of Israel, on BBC, you know, before the Twin Towers came down, being interviewed saying, oh, this is terrorism. This is Osama bin Laden. Now we're into, you know, this global war on terror. In other words, the Jewish, in fact, he was the defense minister too, the Jewish operative politician being interviewed on BBC at the time of the attacks was telling us what happened and what the response was going to be. So the whole thing was scripted decades in advance, as wars are scripted. You know, like the invasion of Afghanistan was scripted before the attacks of 9/11. The invasion of Iraq was scripted, you know, and planned out before the attacks of 9/11. And Wesley Clark told us this, head of the NATO. He said, you know, well, there's seven countries that are going to be invaded, you know, and this is right after 9/11. And this is the plan. And, of course, these are all in the Middle East. These are all Israel's neighbors, and the plan is to balkanize and weaken Israel's neighbors because these are potentially powerful states because they have oil money, you know. And, of course, Iraq was a very fairly advanced country. It really had moved into first world status before the Gulf War of 1991. And so, you know, then between 1991 and virtually the present, it's been decimated. Maybe 4 million people, 5 million people out of 20 murdered. Okay, that's the U.S. government. That blood is on the hands of the American people. Our troops did that, you know, and modern warfare is high-tech mass murder. You know, we've done everything, dropping depleted uranium and, you know, using these electronic mind control weapons on them. Did that in the Gulf War of 1991 so that all the soldiers there, and they had a very weak army. We built it up saying it was the fifth largest in the world. They had a very weak army, but these soldiers, all of them were hearing voice to skull at the same time in which Allah, they thought, was telling them to get down on their knees and dismantle their guns. Allah, that's their God, and they're believers. So they all get down on their knees and they dismantle their guns. okay, there's an example of this kind of, you know, the utility of these directed energy weapons. You take an entire army, get them on their knees to take apart their, and then of course, what does our military do? It mows them down, you know, just yeah. mass murders them. You know, I mean, this is so evil. You know, this whole technology is so evil. But then, of course, the whole program is evil. This is a satanic program. What is, you know, the Jews are Satan's children. These are the serpent people. These are doing the will of Satan. So they are his minions on the planet. And, of course, there are others. But this is the core. And this is bringing about the Antichrist kingdom. This is what it's about. And
how about, can I jump
isn't
in?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, well, I just thought, when you said about that, how about CERN? You must have some thoughts on CERN.
Well, you know, I, a lot of people have looked into this much more than I have. You know, this, you know, ripping holes in, you know, time-space and creating portals and you know, which evil spirits can move in and out, you know, demons and whatnot. All of this is I don't know. You know, you know, when you talk about particle physics and, you know, hadron colliders and blah, 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 you're getting me at really, really sophisticated physics. And I can't speak for that, but you probably know more about it than I do, Andy.
I think there's something obviously going on there, but I don't think that you need to build something like that to have demons on Earth when, as you say, we already have his children on Earth as it is.
Yeah, you know, and this gets into all this very, very interesting stuff about mind control and trauma-based mind control, you know, which is really based on satanic ritual abuse, which goes back, you know, way back to the Egyptian Book of the Dead. And, of course, these Illuminati families have been doing this to their own children, you know, splitting them into multiple personalities and inserting demon spirits, you know. And these are highly ritualized torture techniques that the CIA and the Nazis developed big time, CIA especially and MK Ultra. So what really is going on now, you know, when you look at 9/11, the towers coming down on the TV over and over. Okay, that's trauma-based mind control applied to the masses. That's a psychological operation. That's a psyop. It's meant to terrorize and create a dissociation in the mass mind. So we're all discombobulated, and then the President Bush can come and say, oh, everything's fine, you know, I'm in control, go back and go shopping, you know. And this is how it works. I mean, this is what the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations have been doing since, you know, World War I, psychological warfare against the masses. But then when you get to the individual, see, then you can take it a whole lot farther than that. You know, again, applying the satanic ritual abuse principles, these are embedded in the gang stalking protocols. So what these targeted individuals, and there must be millions, are also being subject to this trauma-based mind control technologies, satanic ritual abuse, harassment, and psychological warfare. So these people are struggling to survive right now, and they are in a war. They're in an electronic prison concentration camp. They are isolated, you know, by all the stalkers and whatnot, driven back into their homes where they can be targeted with these directed energy weapons, et cetera, and mind controlled and have their minds mapped, et cetera. Many, many experiments. I think that the whole field of neuroscience, which is a gigantic field, has been weaponized now. And, you know, there's tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of neuroscientists around the world who go to conferences. And what are they doing? They're mapping the mind. You know, this is what Obama's brain mapping initiative was. That's what the official story was. We're going to map the mind. Well, this is what the neuroscientists are doing. They're getting grants from the Pentagon, you know, $800 billion a year industry itself, and they are mapping the minds of these TIs, and they are also trying to control the minds of these TIs and download them onto supercomputers. So now we're talking about, you know, hell descending upon the earth for these TIs. Their life has turned into hell, and they're struggling for their lives. So, again, I think this may be the most critical issue for the future of humanity. These directed energy weapons, these gang stalking protocols, what I call GOG's new Gestapo, this global police state, which is involves both the military, intelligence, and the civilian components, ganging up on individuals, neutralizing them, stealing their minds and souls, trying to meet suicide quotas to get these people to commit suicide with their soft kill, silent kill, slow kill, no-touch torture technologies. I mean, we're talking about phenomenal evil here, the kind of evil that most people, you know, could not imagine. However, my approach has been historical. You know, okay, let's look at what happened during the MKUltra experiments. You know, well, that's just as evil. You know, it's just a modern application of that. Let's look what happened in Gladio, all that terrorism in all over Europe after World War II. Well, this is what's happening now. So you get these historical threads. You know, all these threads make a rope. And the rope is this global police state. And yes, I'm going to say the United States is central to this, but the United States is controlled by we know who. So that's the story. And I think we've wrapped it up, you know. Now we have to defeat it.
Yeah,
and that's
the,
not going to be easy.
Well, this is where the faith comes in, you know. And I know the listeners that aren't believers don't appreciate it when I say that. But it's something you and I have discussed. And the fact is that all the way the Jews operate, as you say, they work as a unit. They know the superiority that you have if you work as a racial unit. And that's why they promote diversity for everyone else, because they don't want them to have pride in their race and work as a racial unit for their own advancement. But of course, the Jews always work as a racial unit for their own advancement, and that, and we can see the fruits of their labour, and the fruits of their labour are control of all the financial systems, the media, and then subsequently the politicians. And now it's just a sweep up exercise for a few nations that they haven't got their central banks in, like Iran, North Korea, and I believe Cuba. Once they've got that, they've got the global financial system, the whole lot, and then they can do with it as they will. And the other thing that we're hearing about is moving away from cash all the time. Well, you know, if these Jews are going to turn around and say, right, we're going to take a book off Amazon and then we're going to go to your publisher and get them to stop publishing, you know, what's the next thing? Oh, we're going to go to your bank and tell them to stop giving you money because we don't like you. You know, if you don't have cash, then that's another thing that they've got up their sleeves, I believe, Eric. That's just, I threw that in there because we've only got about a minute left just to fill up the show. Do you have any comments before we go?
Yeah, well, that's correct. But of course, their number one target has always been Christianity. I mean, this is the Antichrist system. They hate Christ. They hate Christians because they know Christ is more powerful and will win in the end. And that Christians who are believers actually have some defenses against their Antichrist system. So I think what this is doing to me and many TIs is throwing us deeper and deeper into our Christian faith, because once you confront evil on this scale, you better have your ducks in a row with the Creator, you know. And so that's the silver lining, I think.
I agree, Eric. Well, just before we go, the listeners probably noticed during this show an audible hum that came and went. Now, for the regular listeners, I've never experienced this. It only happens with Eric. And it's not a technical issue, because most of the time it's been a clear line, but it's just some inexplicable thing. So I think that we've been being gang stalked in a way here today. But that about wraps it up for me. Eric, is there anything you want to say before we go?
No, except thank you very much, Andy, for the opportunity to discuss these things. I think we're breaking new ground. I really do. And I don't know anybody else is saying and putting these things together. So very, very important stuff. And I appreciate the opportunity, and God bless your work and yourself.
Absolutely. God bless you too, Eric. You're an excellent feature on this show, regular guest now. Every couple of weeks, the listeners will note that Eric's been on. So that wraps up for me today. I want to thank you all for listening. I'll be back with you all soon, and bye for now.
You have been listening to the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on TBR Radio, brought to you by the Barnes Review. Andrew's book, The Synagogue of Satan, is now available on his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.